1 comedian, 1 million social media subscribers, 12 reported rape and assault cases, 0 television coverage. Welcome to the abuse of comedy.
With Jael Kamaker and Joshua Ross.
Name a lot, and I've kind of seen him around campus, but I didn't really know what his deal was. All I knew was that I'm hearing this guy's name a lot. He seems to be popular, but I don't know what for. I know he's, you know, in the theater department, and he's doing Urine Town, and that was about it. That was my knowledge of James.
Yeah, that's a sociopath trick. When you become a full name, I'm James Veitch, like I'm famous. That's that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was building his reputation. And then I met him after I saw You're in Town, and I was introduced to him by one of my theater friends, I don't remember. And it was one of those things where it was like, the second his hand met mine and shook it, I immediately was like...
He must have had a limp handshake. Like,
oh, God, this is a horrible mistake. Like, I went into it very casually, like, let's find out who this James Veitch guy is everybody keeps talking about. And the second he took my hand, I was like, nope, let go of my hand. Don't like it at all.
Yeah.
It was just a instant creep vibe. He was very, like, overly friendly, and I being the awkward and, you know, weird comic person that I am, I'm trying to play it off.
You're not that. That's what your brain tells you. You are.
And I was telling him, like, oh, it was a great show. And it was because I had a lot of friends in the show, yeah, and I did enjoy it, except for that really traumatizing orgasm scene. Oh, God. That he added. That was the only thing that I didn't like. But I just was complimenting him as a nice way to meet him and hopefully leave soon, and then he put his other hand on my shoulder, and that's when I was like, oh no.
But you have to see that you're a stranger I met yesterday online, who I've talked to for 3 hours today.
Yeah,
you know, you're not what you think you are. You weren't that awkwardness like you thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
But you're the person who sort of you have to carry that guilt that you couldn't have a hat, that you feel guilty that after a play you said it was a good show, which you have to do. What are you going to say?
Yeah, what am I going to say? It sucked. That orgasm scene was awkward.
So what? So I've never seen You're in Town, but it's basically a sort of like Avenue Q sort of thing.
Kind of. It's like a regular. It's almost like a warped version of Our Town. If my memory serves, again, this is...
Our town isn't known in Britain.
11 years ago. It's about a town, and there's a bunch of people, and it's called Urine Town. That's, like, the big joke is that it's called Urine Town, right? And the whole play is kind of, like, structured around that joke. I really don't remember it very well, but the part that was weird was after I left...
What was the rape scene, though? Not the orgasm scene.
Character, I think she's supposed to be like 12, and she just has this like really long, loud, gratuitous orgasm on stage, masturbating, I believe. I don't even remember what it had to do with the narrative, because all I remember is at the time being like, what's happening? And then as it kept building, it was like, all I wanted to do was leave that fucking theater, because it was so, like, it just kept going on. You were like, end the scene, please, just no. Afterwards, I asked about it, because I didn't know anything about the play. I had never seen it before. And I was like, what was the deal? I didn't get the point of that scene. Can somebody explain to me what that was supposed to do. And they were like, oh, no, that's not part of the play. James added that.
So is it all?
So maybe Kristen would be a better... she would actually be the perfect person to ask about Urine in Town because... she said it was her actually idea to do Urine Town as a show, and then he stole it from her.
Yeah, 100%. I think, and that's so fucking endemic of everything, of gender, of the arts, of him and his fucking whatever. Fucking shit. There's one thing I want to say about James before I forget. I think what he did in stand-up, like, why he was successful, is the that sort of Black Mirror idea of technology replacing things, and also the sort of Transformers idea, that out of that 100 million, there's sort of Indian people who speak English as a third language, who can look at the screen and take... There's definitely some kind of globalization, depersonalization thing, both in sort of how he presents... What's that?
I didn't think of it that way. I just thought he was like a 21st century prop comic.
Yeah, and then the new prop is technology, isn't it?
Yeah, that's his prop, exactly.
Because people think their phones are listening to them and the government's listening to them and whatever. People sort of instinctively are bought into this thing that, you know, everyone thought movies were over and then it turns out they're bigger than ever. Everyone thought TV was over and it becomes who's the new internet thing. And people go, oh, well, we thought he was just the shittest comedian, but it turns out he's, you know... the actual fucking Hitler of the art.
Because it's the things he talked about, and there's not actually much content, and there's a format, is he talks a lot about not human beings, the sort of moving the ducks, or the technology, or the sort of spam email, or the where... He is a spam email of a human being. He is because like you've seen, I mean, you and I, we're not verified and we don't have big followings. And if we tweet an article, no one says what they would say about the more famous comedians, you know, the ones where people are emotionally invested. No one goes, how dare you? He's my favourite comedian, you know. And if you, they go, oh shit, I didn't know. And if you think, that 100 million views he got, if you break it down to what percentage of them are sort of shares where people watch 4 seconds and go, no, not for me.
What they don't talk about, though, is that because it's female-dominated and the ratio of women to men is 3-1, I would argue that raises the likelihood of being sexually assaulted.
Yeah, my mum...
percentage of straight men on campus is very low in the related to the amount of college women on campus, and they get a complex, let's just say, about that.
And you can also see that would come from them thinking and the outside world thinking, well, if it's 70% women and 10% gay guys, these men, they're in this sexually open place and all of that, and in an ideal world they would be, but in the reality of it, they're young people who are told they're these great arts people at this great place with all these great people, and you know, I mean, obviously out of a group of men there's going to be a reasonable proportion that can't handle strong female figures. And but I mean, from what I read, there was a guy who went to his daughter's dorm room and just set up a sex ring and got away with it for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, I mean, it's just I don't know. I think it's partially, too, that the college really promotes, you know, independence, you know? Like, it's independent thinkers that would want to go to a super hippie liberal arts college like that, and because a lot of it is kind of like hands off, like, you know, you decide your province paper, no tests, that kind of a thing, treating us like adults, I guess, but we're not adults. I mean, when I got there at 18 years old, I did not feel like an adult. I felt like a child that was
trapped between other children who were pretending to be adults and grad students who looked like they were middle-aged already.
And
I didn't know at the time that they were grad students. I thought that they were just freshmen, and I thought, okay, I'm definitely not ready for college. There's grown-ups here.
I'm sorry, I have to give you the most sincere compliment ever.
What?
In terms of what we were talking about yesterday and you talking about guilt or whatever, as an outsider reading about it, you are a heroic figure in it. You have to see that most people, when they saw him TV years later and didn't know, they knew he was a creep but didn't know there were sort of rape victims even, they'd find an excuse. They'd go, not an excuse, but, you know, I mean, everyone in their life has situations where there's a hard road they want to take. But to take that road is, you know, at the end of the day, there's people that fuck up other people, and there's people that in their head think they're fucking up. But at least that's a control system. You know what I mean? It actually sort of makes you a good person to sort of, you know, I still find myself sort of a lot of the time sort of not down, but sort of, you know, hating on myself, and I sort of see that as a sort of audit on my, you know, I know my own bullshit more than anything, and I can have this conversation and come across as whatever, but I mean, in terms of working and having a stable life and this or that, a lot of time I think I'm a fucking lazy idiot, and that's important. I don't think I'm this starving artist. Different example, the Home Secretary here, who's Priti Patel, she, one of her assistants attempted suicide because she serially sort of verbally abuses people, fires them for no reason. But then the whole cabinet the cabinet and the sort of billionaire controlled media, well, it's not a competition about what is and what, they all go, oh, well, it's her job and that person wasn't doing their job. And I mean, but I'm just, my only point was, forget the word young, people will look for an excuse. But that's just human instinct. They won't think, they're not going to want to think that guy, oh, he, what did he do in that play? He recast someone, like one of the 19-year-olds playing a child, he put in like sex jokes. No one is going to be objective enough to think this is someone who is completely manipulative and at the least bad emotionally abusive. They're going to be, oh, it was a play and there's two sides to it. And that's just a human instinct, unless you can really see the world in your own way. We're taught, you know, with the sort of legal things. And that's why, you know, when I was growing up, I think it was 7% of rapes lead to a, you know, a legal sort of anything, let alone a sort of conviction. Because the whole idea of these very famous comedians thinking, well, if I mention that guy, I'm going to get sued because, what do you call it? You know, burden of proof or whatever. I mean,
right. Yeah, the burden of proof in the US would fall on the plaintiff.
But I mean, people beyond the legal system, we're all taught to take that into our own lives, to be, I don't have the burden of proof. Basically. I wasn't there. Yeah. Whereas if we knew how not to do that, we'd think, well, these seven people were, that we'll tell the same stories. And when that comes out, if you know how to explain it, you do see, like I say on social media, people do disown him. People don't go, oh, that's that powerful, funny guy, apart from one or two out of thousands, really.
That was a really good point, actually, that you made, that his kind of alternative niche level of fame, if you want to call it that, has kind of been an advantage because it's easier for people to say, oh, yeah, God, I didn't know that. Okay, next, you know? Instead of defending him, like you said, or making excuses as to why this could have happened, or try to come up with a alternative scenario to, you know, make everything make sense in their head, so they don't have to do the hard work of realizing that everyone is a flawed human being in some way, shape, or form, and your basically your worth as a in your human character kind of stems from how much does that damage the people around you.
And I mean, do you hear about the Chris D'Elia thing?
Yeah. That's actually why I pushed so hard for this was because of the Chris D'Elia thing.
Yeah, but I mean, whether it's Joe Rogan or more liberal talk show hosts, no one calls him out in the same way they call out, I don't know, Donald Trump or Bill Clinton or whomever,
right,
because
yeah.
It's, oh, I knew him, he was funny, and, or TJ Miller or something. Actually, what I really like Pete Holmes is TJ Miller, who was one of those actor stand-up types, he was on a lot of things, Silicon Valley.
Yeah, I know that guy.
He yeah, and you know, he was a sort of serial abuser.
Yeah, I found that out, and I was like, really, that guy? Like, that was, and I think it was around the same time, too, that I found out about the Veach stuff, like, in 2018. So I think it was kind of around the same time where I was like, Jesus Christ, like, these abusers can really come in any shape or form.
Yeah,
like,
and they, but also,
they could be doing this shit behind the scenes. Like, it doesn't matter what they look like, how they carry themselves, what their interests are, all of that's a smokescreen.
But he was in a crew with sort of Kumail Nanjiani and Pete Holmes. He's a sort of very vanilla, sort of grown-up Christian. And Pete Holmes immediately said, you know, he's my friend, but I've been taught to not just dismiss women. Like, this is the next day after it happened. He actually took an approach where he said something public that was, I mean, I'm not going to quote, I mean, I'd have to look it up to quote him about, maybe, I think I said it in a way that maybe sounds more of an excuse making, but he said, you know, just because I know this person, it doesn't mean they haven't done these things.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not, whereas most people, whether they're really funny or really empathetic or whatever, you know, it will take a lot for them, even if they believe or understand this person's done all those things, they, particularly being famous with the media and stuff, they feel, if they say anything publicly that's off the script, they're sort of putting their head somewhere, let alone saying, oh yeah, he clearly did it, you know, I mean.
Right, and I understand not wanting to implicate somebody who's been your friend, and, you know, you have no personal experience with any of this behavior that you're describing. I mean, I have friends who knew James at the same time that we went to Sarah Lawrence at the same time, and they had no idea any of this was going on.
Yeah.
They didn't have any bad experience.
It's completely,
yeah.
It's so weird that it's so abusive as an audience member when you find out that Bill Cosby or, you know, I really followed Me Too, and there were so many sort of minor figures in the scene that,
You know. And, I mean, I think it's still happening, you know, it's just now it's not getting as much attention because everybody's like, oh yeah, well, what else, you know, we've been doing that for 3 years. It's like, yeah, sexual assault doesn't just stop because it's not trending.
I mean, everyone thinks it's someone else's problem. Did you hear about all the UCB cases?
Yeah.
Did you hear about that? Do you know about, like, the Upright Citizens Brigade? That was the Sarah Lawrence of it.
Yeah, I know Upright Citizens Brigade, but did they have a Me Too thing?
They had two huge ones.
Cool.
So what happened was, all the really great sort of, well, let's not say great, because it's very easy to sort of call everyone a genius, but all the very successful people who started Earwolf and Andy Daly and Key and Peele and Broad City, they all suddenly were replaced by tutors who were running it, who were getting other tutors to work for free. And then there was a guy in New York who was accused, but because they accused him on Facebook, the UCB did, he just sued them for a six-figure sum and took it and quit comedy. Where, and I don't know if that was harassment or assault. But then in the LA scene, you know what LA's like.
Did,
and
they,
also,
name, did they name who it was?
Yeah, it's all been out there. It was all 4 years ago. But these aren't, these aren't the famous people. These are,
Right.
Like, these people,
but there
that,
are still people in power within UCB?
No, but I'm saying the people in power. It's not like Amy Poehler was there every week.
Right. So whoever's running things now.
Well, there was, but they never,
so Amy Poehler and those people, do they still profit from UCB, do you know?
It's not an income earner, is it? It's a theatre.
Okay,
I imagine.
No, it really is, of course not.
But I mean, the reason it happened was before that, it had that reputation. We'll go to the UCB, and on a Thursday night, you will see the big new thing in this great comedy show. But then there's six other nights of the week, you know.
Right.
And the whole, like you see with the Democrats that abuse the system, whoever they are, it's, I'm a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm the good guy. I'm at the UCB, I'm the tutor, I've got a photo with me and Zach Galifianakis, and it's, what was he going to do, say no to a selfie? You know, but yeah. you put yourself in, let's see, I'll Google.
Do you think they're safe if they have those labels attached to them?
Look at Sarah Lawrence, that's exactly what it is. It's a school that's got shitty SAT scores and plays on a reputation of being the liberal arts, female-dominated thing where...
Yeah.
You know.
Hiding... Well, you know, that's just like any other school, though. They're all going to hide their...
Like being at Sarah Lawrence, you do see people that are the most talented but don't have... Can't be nice in meetings. Whatever Veitch was, he's that kind of person. He can go to meetings and act like the nice guy.
Which, no.
You know what I mean? You could totally see him in those meetings, sort of well-dressed, sort of... looking all happy, being, oh yeah, I'll totally do that. And then a year later, they've got a shit show no one watches. But then in terms of investing in, you know, I mean, you see these people that don't have the right face, that have the right material, but don't have the right cadence. You don't have the right rhythm.
Right. It's that.
And then you see these Bill Cosbys that have the perfect rhythm and the perfect delivery, and they're talking fucking bullshit. And it's only 40 years later, you realise, oh, I got to be the dad on a program everyone else wrote and where everyone else could act.
Mm.
You know, and it's a spectrum, you know. Yeah. Where does Jerry Seinfeld picking up 17-year-olds in the park when he's got $100 million in the bank? Like, where does that fit into it?
Yeah, very good question. Very good question.
You know, I mean, it's completely, that's simultaneously, you can completely defend she was on legal age and he didn't know about all this stuff and one thing, which I mean, I wouldn't. And you can completely say, oh, he's a patsy, isn't he? I mean, the good side of Seinfeld is he saw the talented actors and writers. He didn't think, oh, I'm so much better than Larry David. But in terms of that whole comedians and cars getting coffee, some of the episodes early on were great. But that whole cult of comedy, you know, he's always goes, when I meet a comedian, I think they're this, this and this. And we're all renegades. It's like, your favourite band is Dire Straits or Steely Dan or something. How are you this? You've got $200 million worth of cars. Why are you acting like Iggy Pop? Like, what is this? You know? But why would he see that? He just sees himself as everyone else sees him, as the best, nicest guy. Which, you know, I mean, you know, with Seinfeld, I blame the hair and makeup department for making every woman look like they had to be a supermodel in every episode.
That's just everywhere, though. I mean, that's true for any show that any female...
But Cougar Town, at least they... At least Cougar Town.
A girlfriend's life revolves around home. They got homework, homeroom, and they want to run away from home and live with their 38-year-old celebrity boyfriend. I met my girlfriend's parents the other day. Why is it that girlfriend parents are the same age as you? What is the matter? I'm studying for the SAT, I gotta know! And why are they called parents? The pair that pays your rent? You can just live in my penthouse. I'm an adult man. I'm very rich and famous. I'm 38 years old. I'm dating a 17-year-old. I'm going to prom next week. Prom. What a waste of a Saturday. I'm going as a date and a chaperone. That's two proms for the price of one. That's two proms. I'm going to two proms. That's two proms too many for someone two times the age of his girlfriend plus two twice.
Just like him to acknowledge it publicly. He still hasn't done that. He's only mentioned it.
Of course he hasn't. Of course he hasn't. But Donald Trump doesn't think he lost the election because.
Oh, I know.
But he also does.
Living in his own denial, classic
narcissist. No, but also forget labels. He knows he lost, but he knows he's proud, and he knows he's going to leave. I mean, like saying, the first thing I'm going to do is imprison Hillary, and at the end you sort of call her and go, "Oh well, we both fought a good fight." You know, he knows. Why would Veach say this person who's criminally, beyond criminally manipulative, why would they finally choose to come out and be honest? I mean, to look at, I always thought with Louis C.K., he could have gone on, no, but he could have gone on any of those shows, the Cones, where we've gone on for years, and said, you know, I mean, if he looked at it as just to sort of, you know, he came up as a kid with Bill Hicks and this and Sam Kinison, and they all died, and he was like on the road and he was drunk all the time and taking drugs and his wife was pregnant, he was freaking out and he was like completely fucking up his life or something. At least, you know, whereas, I mean, at least it would be what it is now, where, you know, he just compared himself to Jesus. He just told a story on some documentary where...
He did. Louis C.K.?
Yeah. I've got the quote here. But I mean, but also it's only comedians that care about Louis C.K. His audience was selling out this and that venue. I mean, Louis, whatever it was, it didn't have 20 million viewers. It was on sort of FX or whatever. And I mean, when people are told by the New York Times, you have to see Louis C.K., they'll pay $40 a ticket. But I mean, most people don't care. If he organised the tour tomorrow with no protests or anything, he'd be playing to 20 times less people than he was. He would not... He could take all his ticket sales free and he wouldn't be filling Madison Square Gardens. You know. But,
yeah.
But the quote he said was, Louis C.K. is all too willing to go along with a comparison. I was in a chess store and the guy who ran the store says, I know who you are. You are a great martyr for history. And like the martyr, you will be crucified and destroyed and then you will live on. Louis C.K. joked. And I'm like, Jesus, man, I'd really rather just fucking live my life. And I mean, I'm going to play devil's advocate defense for Louis C.K.
Okay, yeah, do it.
So, to draw a distinction between him and Veitch, I mean, really see, like I was saying with sort of the culture around Veitch, I'm interested in more than him. He's just a small person, you know, to do it. There's this sort of inability as a society to process that someone who wrote a sitcom with a few jokes, I mean, the fact that he was written by, starred, directed by, I held the cameras, I did everything, that's clearly a sign of sort of arrogance and narcissism. And when he made the shit show before and said, if we'd had another series that got 50 million viewers, there's clearly, I think what I was talking about earlier, where he had to act like he was punching up and playing the victim simultaneously. But then, in terms of the corporate culture in the arts, the idea that we're going to make everything gender neutral and hire women that haven't done stand-up, that have gone to Harvard to host this show, you know, all that woman's done. I don't watch American TV, I'm not, I'm just pointing out an example.
Right.
And it can be a man, it can be a minority, it can be a left-wing person.
Sure.
It is, they've put themselves in the final. They said yes to work, which as an actor is what you're taught to do. I mean, there was a really disturbing case here where the one comedian who was reported on by the most right-wing powerful blog that had seen as the most important political insiders, they targeted Tez Ilias, who sexually harassed women. He was like sexting them years ago. But explicitly because, and I've got evidence of this, because he was pro-Jeremy Corbyn, the sort of Labour left-wing candidate, because he was part of Jeremy Corbyn's, because he'd talked at his conferences, they actually said on Twitter, there was an Irish woman who had a James Veitch in her life, and they said, oh, this is that Corbyn-supporting comedian, and never deleted it. So this woman has outed this Veitch, and they've said, oh, actually, this other comedian has done it because he's Asian, because he supported a politician. And I mean, what that does is, as a culture, those women, I don't know the victims, but those women who, he went to this new comedy union thing and they said, well, what about all these, hopefully it was just messages he sent me. I don't know if he harassed people. I don't know if he abused them. I don't know if he assaulted people. But when I called this right-wing blog on their important London office, they went, oh, what, you think it's okay to serially sodomize women? And I went, well, there's no evidence of that. And if there was, why would it be reported in the biggest national newspapers without reporting?
Exactly.
But I mean, from Princess Diana, who was sort of literally killed by the media chasing her, growing up in a time where if you're a pop star, if you're an athlete, particularly if you're a gay minority or something, you're sort of hounded to death. You know, the George Michaels and the Amy Winehouses, they come out of a more American corporate side of feeding people drugs. But in terms of what the Rupert Murdoch, and now it's more than that, everyone's a Murdoch almost, British media is, it is completely... I was at a wedding once abroad and it was actually the Aziz Ansari thing that came out, and someone said Master of None, and I said, have you heard about this? And they go, oh, I'm not interested in people's personal lives. But I mean, forget that person. I just thought, as a culture, I've always been taught celebrity is the thing. You know, and that's, I mean, I just wrote a blog about the problems in the comedy industry, mostly with this union thing.
Yes, man, like, I'll let you get on, but like, Tez, he's pro-Corbyn and he's Muslim, and that makes him an easy target for Guido, though, you know, that's what it is.
Thanks to the Petrol Girls, whose song Touch Me Again was used in the introduction, and Jeremy Koplowitz for his impersonation of Jerry Seinfeld. Joshua Ross is on Twitter at JoshuaRoss33. Y'all Kamaka has the handle at KamakaThoughts. I am but a robot, who cannot pronounce her name. But Kamaka has two K's in it, and Thoughts has a Z, and there's an underscore in between.
Well, Cheryl had a dog named Skip that she loved to bits. He had big sad eyes and he was gentle around the kids. He could do tricks that would amaze ya, but he developed hip dysplasia. The veterinarian said it's surgery or euthanasia. Cheryl asked how much it would cost to get Skip sorted. The vet said if you have to ask, then you can't afford it. Well, she could barely make the rent. She said, Skip, you know you're my best friend. And she made sure he couldn't see the needle at the end. She hummed the bass line to North Window by the Inbreds just to keep from crying. She took the bus downtown cause she was too upset to drive. Well, once upon a time there was a 10-year-old boy named Dave. He liked cars and karate and he hardly ever misbehaved. He got it into his little boy head. He didn't want to eat anything dead. He told his parents, no meat for me please, just French fries and bread. Well, Dave's daddy was a dude who didn't deal with dissent too good. Said, while you're under my roof, I want this clearly understood. You'll eat whatever mama is making, be it beef, baby, back ribs, or bacon. And he slammed his fist down on the table so hard it set the silverware shaking. Well, Dave got sent to his room and he lay on his bed and said, I wonder where my real parents are. And he cried himself to sleep under a ceiling full of glow-in-the-dark stars. If there are victory bells, we should ring them. If there are victory songs, we should sing them. 'Cause we are the kings of the animal kingdom. We are the kings of the animal kingdom. We'll be right back. animal kingdom.
I asked what the band was called.
I said it's called The Burning Hell.
I said I've never heard of you.